Thank you.
Any points?
You said each one is like, how can you reach to someone who's like, who has no interest in, can you teach them also?
Or? Give them prasad, give them holy name.
So that's the first step, like how can we, the second step, how can we reach?
Set an example. And then preaching means, you know, if you begin to explain to someone about something in relation to Krishna consciousness and they're interested and they're absorbing it, then you give them more. If they're regurgitating it, they're not interested, then you stop. So you have to work it out. You know, if people aren't listening, then don't tell them. If people are listening, then give them more.
Lord Krishna said, how indigestible is the property of a brahmana, even when enjoyed just slightly and by one more potent than fire. What then to speak of kings who try to enjoy it, presuming themselves lords?
Chandan, you want to read them?
Even those that are made powerful by austerity, mystic yoga and so on, cannot enjoy property stolen from a brahmana, and want to speak of others.
So, any points?
So, Chanakya says that a person who has knowledge, who is a jnani or a pundit, what is the quality of a pundit? He has three qualities, Chanakya says. Right? He says all women as mothers. Right? That's how he sees, except for the wife, but everyone else you see them as mothers. Right? And then, what does Chanakya say? Right? Someone else's property? You see it as untouchable. That's someone who has knowledge. You don't touch someone else's property. And what is the third element?
Someone is wife as well.
That's the same thing, women. So. Anyone remember the third one?
I can't remember.
One third one. Slipped my mind or something. But this is the basic principle. That we cannot enjoy something which belongs to another person. And particularly, we cannot enjoy something which belongs to someone who is spiritually progressed. Because according to Krishna in the Ishapanishad, it says that everyone has his quota. So you can't take someone else's quota. Like that's actually, it's not my thing. No, that's, what's that?
That was ironic.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not my phone, but
that's an example.
So I can't take that phone. I can't just take it home. It belongs to someone else. So everyone has their quota. Right? What belongs to you, that belongs to you. And what belongs to someone else, that belongs to someone else. Right? And Krishna gives a quota to everyone. Right? And then according to what you receive, then that's what you can use in Krishna's service. So to infringe on someone else's property, there will be reactions. And as it is being said here, particularly if someone is very spiritually advanced, then you cannot take their property. It is improper. And therefore you will receive reactions for that. There will be reactions, that's the point. So therefore, we have to be very careful. Right? If something belongs to someone else, then you don't touch like that. And if something belongs to someone who's very advanced, you have to be extremely careful. Just like in ISKCON. You know, this property we're on now, it belongs to Prabhupada. So it's his property. And sometimes, you know, devotees, they take things from Prabhupada's property. or they misuse the resources. So they think, oh, there's so much, we can just, you know, like that. But Prabhupada was very particular about everything. Even in the very beginning of ISKCON, in the very beginning of ISKCON, Prabhupada was keeping accounts. 1967, right? And ISKCON had no money back in 1967, really. 66 even, I think it may have been. Prabhupada was keeping accounts. He was, you know, writing, when someone would get money for a bus ticket, Prabhupada would write down, you know, 50 cents or something in America, whatever it was. He was accounting for everything. And even Prabhupada, he set it up that he had to go to the account, to the treasurer, and ask for money if he wanted to go on the bus or something like that. That was Prabhupada's system. So there cannot be misuse of the property or the funds. Everything belongs to Krishna.
Okay.
This
verse, a little bit I can't understand.
Yep.
It says, like, what then to speak of kings who try to enjoy receiving themselves lords?
It's self-explanatory. A king should not try to take a brahmana's property. That's all. Any other point? I do not consider hala to be real poison because it has an antidote. But a brahmana's property, when stolen, can truly be called poison, for it has no antidote in this world.
One that takes Brahman's property taken to the jar, that actually taken the first grade of poison.
Any points?
Brahman property or anyone's property?
Particularly Brahman.
What about others like?
What do you think? Think about it. Use your brain. God gave you a brain, use it. Answer the question yourself. Don't ask me silly questions. What do you think? If you steal anyone's property, what will happen? There's a reaction. That's karma. That's obvious. Everyone knows that. So if you come and take anyone's property, you will get reactions. And therefore, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, if you take and you don't offer it back to him, then you are stena, you are thief. He says in the third chapter of the Gita. You know, if you take the bounty of the earth, if you take the things which are offered by the earth and they're not used in Krishna's service, then you receive reactions. Then you will suffer. That's the law of karma. So Krishna says, then you will, that is pap, Krishna says in the third chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Pap means there are reactions. There will be reactions. Pap means sinful activity. So it is considered sinful if you take something and it does not belong to you, particularly if you take from Krishna. So we take some food from the earth, you grow something and then you don't offer it to Krishna, that's sinful. No? So we always have to be in that mentality. Everything is meant to be offered to Krishna. And then we become purified. Particularly, it says, do not take from the brahmanas, from the holy people. If you steal from the holy people, you'll get big reaction. Many years ago, I was staying at Govardhan Hill in Vrindavan, at one ashram. My Guru Maharaj's ashram, Bhakti Vinayaka ashram. And then one so-called devotee, he came there and he dressed like a brahmachari, and then, you know, things started going missing. And then they went and looked in his bags, and things were in the bags. He was taking people's things. And then the leader there, the president, he said, "You know, what is wrong with you? You're in a holy place, stealing from holy people. Like, you're actually insane."
Holy articles, stealing holy articles.
Yeah. Stealing from holy people. It's like in front of Govardhan Hill, in front of God Himself. I mean, even if you do it in the material world, you know, you go outside this temple. I mean, if you steal something from within this temple, there are serious reactions. People are still bogus sometimes. That's why now we've got the new kitchen, everything's kind of in the back. It's hard to do, but when everything was out, and about like this used to be the bogus room, and people would go in and take things. And, you know, it's improper attitude. If you steal outside, you get karma. If you steal inside the temple itself, then all sorts of karma. Every reaction is coming from Krishna Himself. So this is the improper mentality. So specifically, it is saying here that if one is involved in any of these kind of activities, there will be reactions. We have to understand that point. Sometimes you think you become free of reactions. And when chanting the holy name, there are 10 offenses. And the 7th offense is, you know, in the morning after Mangalati, we say the 10 offenses. What is number 7? Anyone's ever been to Mangalati? Oh, that's number 1. I said 7. Right. To commit sinful activities on the strength of the holy name. So you think I can do whatever I want to do, and then I'll just chant, and all the reactions will be cleansed. Krishna, it's explained that if you act like that, that is like using Krishna as a doormat. Because it means, you know, you're just wiping your feet on Krishna. No one likes to be treated like that. I don't like being treated like that. Someone comes and just abuses me or uses me. I don't like that. None of us, no one likes that. Krishna's a person. He doesn't like it. It's not proper conduct. So if you treat Krishna like that, you will get reactions. So therefore, it is said, we have to be very careful. And here, in particular, it is saying that if we act like that, we will get reactions to our activities. Any points?
The same thing applies for Vaishnavas as well. Even if the Brahmana's property should not be taken, similarly for Vaishnavas also the same thing. For Vaishnavas also, the property should not be stolen.
Of course. Obviously. Poison kills only the person who ingests it. And an ordinary fire may be extinguished with water. But the fire generated from the kindling wood of a brahmana's property burns the thief's entire family down to the root. So, wood of a bandhabru.
Sri Nabisumada Chakravarti compares the fire ignited by stealing a brahmana's property to the fire that blazes within the cavity of an old tree. Yet fire cannot be put out even with the water of numerous rainfalls. Rather, it burns the whole tree within, from within, all the way down to the roots in the ground. Similarly, the fire ignited by stealing a brahmana's property in the most deadly and should be avoided at all costs.
Any points there? So Krishna's teaching us how powerful these reactions can become. Right? If you commit these activities of stealing from a Brahmana, it means a very advanced person. Right? The reaction can destroy your whole family. Right?
or even your nation, your dynasty, all those things, very on. If you commit inauspicious activity, it will affect those around you also. So that's why we have to be very careful how we act, how we behave. Because if we act and behave improperly, then we will get reactions. And as Krishna's point, he's trying to warn us that the reactions will be severe. It won't just come to us, but it will come to many, those who surround us. And so we have to be very careful how we act, how we behave. Any points there?
They take in Brahmanas for things like in those days and all, they used to like cheat in the land and everything. It's like, is that like that they are mentioning? Like, they used to take the land and then they used to cheat the Brahmanas and things like that.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, because stealing Brahmanas property, that's what normally means.
Yeah, means anything, like their land or their cows or anything, any of their possessions. If a person enjoys a Brahmana's property without receiving due permission, the property destroys three generations of his family. But if he takes it by force or gets the government or other outsiders to help him or usurp it, then 10 generations of his ancestors and 10 generations of his descendants are all destroyed.
According to Srila Sridhar Swami, Tui Purusha refers to oneself, one's sons and one's grandsons.
Any points?
Such a harsh punishment.
Yeah.
Very severe.
Very severe. Even your children, all your children will die. Yeah, generations. Your grandchildren will die as well. There are examples. There are examples where these things took place. You know, where the Lord is offended or a great devotee is offended, then whole families can be destroyed, dynasties can be destroyed, nations can be destroyed, villages can be destroyed. There are many examples of this. So, the basic point is that the devotee may not accept the offense. If you offend a devotee, the devotee may not be offended. Because that's the nature of a devotee. A devotee is tolerant. You know, a devotee should be more tolerant than a tree, more humble than a blade of grass, ready to offer respect to others, not expecting respect to oneself. So if someone's like that, they really won't take offense very easily. Devotees don't take offense easily. Yeah, that's the nature of a devotee. They're not easily offended. But Krishna, on the other hand, will not accept the mistreatment of his devotees. So you're dealing with Krishna. You're not dealing with the devotee per se in some circumstances. The devotee may not even feel offended, but Krishna will be offended. And if Krishna is offended, then you have to receive the reaction. So we have to be very careful, because the devotee may forgive us, but Krishna may not forgive us, and the reactions will come. So the basic principle is that if you do offend a devotee, you must go to the devotee and beg for forgiveness. And that requires humility and sincerity in our spiritual life. Because sometimes we may consciously or unconsciously offend Krishna's devotees. You know, sometimes I don't think I consciously offend devotees, but sometimes unconsciously, you know, I might upset someone. I might say something which the way I said it or what I said was inappropriate or something like that. A devotee becomes offended or upset. Then it's a test of your sincerity. You know, and most of the time, I mean, now I'm, you're one of the senior devotees in the community. So there's not many devotees who are more senior than me. Most of them are junior. But sometimes the junior person becomes upset. So it's a test of your sincerity and your humility Will you go to that person and ask for forgiveness and apologize? And Krishna is watching all the time. What is your consciousness like? What is your consciousness like? Are you willing to?
But, for example, unknowingly, if you offend somebody, how do you come to know that? You probably didn't intend that, or your tone was a bit harsh and they felt offended. You didn't intend to do it, or you don't realize that you've done this. How do you sort of go back and...
Then you have to... I mean, you will see, generally, I mean, sometimes I say something to someone and then I don't realize it myself, but then you see their behavior changes. So then you realize, oh, something must have happened. Yeah, and then you say to the devotee, did I do something? Or the devotee said, yeah, well, actually, when you said like that, I didn't appreciate it. So I'm sorry, I didn't mean it like that.
But this happens mostly when you're doing a service jointly together, like, for example, on the other hand of the story. You might sort of, you know, you want to get things moving, and then sometimes after the festival, like...
Yeah, but then you have to see, is it an offense? An offense is a different thing. You know, like sometimes, you know, when... Sometimes you have to say, hey, come on, get moving. Because we're doing some service.
But that's when the devotees push you to come in for free, and then you're told by the management that's no freebies here, because this is not temple. This is like, you know, you're doing the service and Westerners are standing in the queue and you're representing the temple. But then devotees always want to come in through the side gate or through, you know, and then because they know you from the temple, they want to sort of, then sometimes I tell you, Mataji, am I doing a service or am I doing this service? I'm offending so many devotees because I know them in the temple, but I can't do that there. So I want them to stand in the queue and pay for it, but then they're not willing to pay. They want their children to come.
No, that's their problem. That means devotees always want to get everything for free. That's the first one.
Because they're so used to doing it in the temple.
No. It's a understanding, or it's a cultural deviation, actually. If a devotee is asked, like Rath Yatra is an example, right?
Okay, Rath Yatra, for example.
So the management in the temple, everyone knows, they've said all the devotees have to pay for prasadam, except devotees who are doing service, you know, on the day, and like face painting, they have to pay for it, right? Everyone knows management said that. So if devotees know that, and still they tried it, that means they're directly offending the management, or they're disobeying the orders of the management. So they have the problem, not you. If you're enforcing it, there's no offense. And if they take offense, that's not your problem, that's their problem. So, what to do? But devotees, no, it's a cultural problem here. I see it like in all of the events, like we do holy, like you do...
Now I've got used to it, like sort of, I really don't mind what they say, but... Before, when I started this service, I felt so offended and I just came literally crying back home. Like, I'm not doing the service next year because so, like, you know, that kept coming back to me sort of thing for a few days.
Because for years at the farm I've been organizing retreats. So we have Burujan Puru's retreat, right? You know, every year we do, and many devotees come in. And, you know, I don't take the payments anymore because, you know, I kind of, someone else took it over. But, you know, for years... And devotees always hassle me all the time. Oh, Prabhu, oh, give me a discount, this, that. No. Pay more. Why do you come to me asking for a discount? Why don't you come to me and say, oh, I'll pay more? Because the money is going to maintain the farm, Krishna's cows, you know, some donations given to Burujan Prabhu himself, like that. What's your mentality? And it's actually a problem here in the temple. Devotees come and it's like, it's a taking mentality, not a giving mentality.
Then they say, we give so much donation to the temple. I'm like, I don't...
Some do, but some don't. Because we have the figures, you know, in the treasury department. No, I'm telling you honestly. There's let's have an honest discussion. We've got the figures in there, and it's not the full-time or initiated devotees who give the most money. The people who give the most money generally are the guests, the visitors who come, who are uninitiated, like, you know, people like that. So devotees, they say, I give so much. Yeah, that's wonderful. They do give something. But, you know, when everyone starts getting this mentality, it really, many devotees develop the mentality of a taking mentality. And even Prabhupada himself criticized this. He said, it appears they have come to take. Prabhupada's own words, they have come to take. That's not the mood of ISKCON. You know, I criticize people who come here because, you know, we have lunch here every day. You see, there's some guys, they're not like what you call active devotees, but they come every day to eat free food. And sometimes I say, what do you do here? Fine, you want to come and eat, but if you want to come and eat every day, do something in return. One guy said to me, I carry the buckets upstairs. Oh, wonderful, you carry the buckets upstairs. Yeah, and then you have like, so we'll say on a $10 meal, yeah, what you get, right, you know, if you're going to come in for lunch, you know, you pay $10 for that. You know. Yeah, like, that's bottom line. Yeah, right, $10. You just can't get, and all you do is carry a couple of buckets upstairs. Go and wash some pots. Yeah, we're struggling here, honestly. Devotees are struggling to maintain all this. Like, I'm not understaffed down at the farm all the time. People say, oh, why don't you do this, why don't you do that? I was like, come down and do something then. Yeah, if you want to see something happening, come, we're doing as much as we can. You know, we're dedicating ourselves to Krishna. Right? So devotees, quite often they get this mentality. It's actually culturally, it's not the correct mentality. It's very much about taking rather than giving. That's why we have to be trained to get into the giving mentality. That's why, you know, like myself, I was a brahmachari for 8 years. So, you know, I collected hundreds of thousands of dollars for this temple. Hundreds of thousands of dollars. You know, just collected every, you know, some weeks I was collecting $2,000 a week on average. Some, you know, one week I collected $5,000. You know, different ways was that. And then, you know, give it all to the temple, to the deities. So then after that training, you know, then when I come out now, I'm married and I'm in Grihastha life, but I don't have the mentality that this place is just for taking. You know, I do take. I get free prasadam whenever I come here. You know, I get fed. I feel very grateful for that. But, you know, I make money. The farm generates, you know, tens of thousands of dollars a year for the temple. You know, and we're trying to do service. And, you know, I come and I teach the devotees. I try to give. So we should get out of this taking mentality. It's actually a cultural mentality, and it's, unfortunately it's there amongst the community. So you don't have to feel bad if you tell them.
Now, like, I've been told, like, what I actually have to do, that's what the management wants. I'm just representing the management.
Yeah, so you tell them that.
I mean, some people think I'm rude, but...
No, what I say to them, they come and they say, oh, can I have something for free? Mm-hmm. I say, yeah, you can. But just, you have to get a letter from signed by Andy Rudaprabhu and give it to me. And then, yeah, I will. Seriously. I'll give it to you for free. But just bring me the letter with his name on it and then I'll do it. Is that okay? Then they go, oh. Do you tell them? Yeah, like, you know, I don't know what happens at Crossways now, but when I used to work at Crossways, you know, nearly 30 years ago, like, people would walk in and say, oh, can I have a free meal? I said, no problem, just wash the dishes for half an hour. You wash the dishes for half an hour, we'll give you a free meal. No problem. So contribute, and then we will receive. But we don't want people to just come and, you know, just carry the bucket. Oh, I carry the bucket. Oh, family. Any other points? What can we do? Okay. Members of the royal order, blinded by royal opulence, fail to foresee their own downfall. Childishly hankering to enjoy a brahmana's property, they are actually hankering to go to hell. So, Lila Ma, you'd like to... Oh, sorry. Okay. So... specifically, it's saying the members of the royal order. So it's talking about people have wealth, right? Jamaishraya, Shuta Shubhya. Yeah. So it says these four: Jama Aishraya, Shuta Shubhya. Jama means your birth. You're born in a high class family. Aishwarya means your wealth. Shruta means your learning, and Shribya means your
bodily beauty. So if you are intoxicated by any of these four, you may offend others. You know, and we've already heard earlier in this canto, of the four, the most intoxicating is wealth. Right? If you have money, it's very intoxicating. Right? It creates a mentality of superiority. You see in this area, because people are affluent in this area. You pick up on the vibration of some of them. So they have this real root of arrogance, which is that. Because when you get wealth, you become. So if you become wealthy, the danger is that you may become arrogant and you may offend others. So you have to be very careful. So if you have money, you need to use it in Krishna service. Just like a few months ago, I was in Bali, and there's one devotee, he owns a hotel in Sunur. He owns a Paul Hotel, and it's got a devote, prasadam restaurant in there and everything like that. A very wealthy devotee. Very wealthy devotee. But he goes out regularly onto the streets and sells Prabhupada's books. Right? So just like a humble person, he has to stop people and give them and ask them for a donation for the book. You know, the guy's got, he's probably standing in front of his own hotel. People think he's just some poor guy on the street asking for donations. No, but he keeps this mentality. He doesn't become proud of his wealth. But he stays in the mentality that I am a servant. So if you do have wealth, and there's nothing wrong with having wealth, but it must be used in Krishna's service. Just like that devotee who owns the hotel. He built a house for all the gurus who come to Bali to preach. So whenever they come, they have a place where they can stay, where it's quiet and they can study and everything, and then they can teach them. And so he's using his wealth in the service of it. So that's the mentality. Now, if we have wealth, it must be used in Krishna's service. Any points? For as many years as there are particles of dust touched by the tears of a generous brahmanas, who have dependent families and whose properties is stolen, uncontrolled kings who usurp a brahmana's property are cooked, along with their royal families, in the hell known as Kumbhi Paka. So this sounds severe.
Scary.
Yeah, it's scary. But why is Krishna speaking like this? Because he's trying to scare everyone. Sometimes that's the only thing that works. There are different ways to teach someone. Sometimes nothing else works but the danda. The danda means the stick. If they don't have a sin, you have to pull out the stick. So if you go to India, all the policemen have a stick. And they'll just whack someone. Pick up the stick, just hit them. In Australia, if the police hit someone and they take them to court, they hit me. In India, at least, now it's all corrupt. The police are corrupt. But the system is like that. There is some authority there. And even these days, with your children. When I grew up, we did something wrong, my dad just grabbed me and just on my bottom. Bang, bang. I do that to my daughter now, she'd take me to court. She'd go to the school and say, my father is abusing me. My father didn't abuse me, just get me. I remember. It was good, I appreciate that. There has to be some discipline. So, if there's not discipline, then we will cause suffering for others. That's why character has to be created. Right? And it says in the Bhagavatam, it says, do not become a teacher, don't become a parent, don't become a husband, don't become a
demigod,
yeah, father, mother, a brahmana.
Unless you can deliver your dependence.
Yeah, a teacher, anything. Unless you can deliver your dependence from birth and death. That's your responsibility. You must discipline it. You have to create discipline. That's why Chanakya says, the guru must correct the disciple, right? And the parent must correct the child. Otherwise, they develop bad character. So it's our responsibility. If we're a teacher, a guru, a parent, you have to correct. Otherwise, your dependents, they develop bad character. You have to say, you know, hey, you're acting improperly. You're doing wrong. How will you progress? If you don't do these things, then people can progress. That's why people don't like taking authority, positions of authority. You know, like you said, you went to do your service and, you know, and then so you went home crying and you said, I'm not doing that again. You know, many say like that. That's why people don't want to take positions of authority, because it just becomes a headache. You have to tell people and correct them what to do. But that is the position. If you're the authority, you have to do like that. Any points? Okay. Whether it be his own gift or someone else's, a person who steals a brahmana's property will take birth as a worm in feces for 60,000 years. So it becomes more and more
graphic.
It's just Krishna's just making the point. That's the point. You know, sometimes you have to become graphic, right? Because it really gets through to people, especially Indian people, because they have a lot of faith in the Shastra. When they hear these things, they become very, you know, taken aback. You become 60,000 years, like a worm, and then they become one. So that's why Krishna is saying these things, to make it definite. I do not desire Brahmana's wealth. Those who lust after it become short-lived and are defeated. They lose their kingdoms and become snakes who trouble others. So we know the Bhagavatam says that if someone is envious of others, they can take birth as a sarpa. Sapra means the snake or scorpion. Snakes and scorpions, they cause problems to others. One time the scorpion wanted to get across the river and the horse was there. And the scorpion said, put me on your back and take me across the river. And the horse said, no, you'll bite me. Right. And the scorpion said, I won't bite you, because if I bite you, then we'll drown. So halfway across the river, and then the scorpion stung the horse. And the horse said, what did you do that for? He said, now I'm going to drown and you're going to drown. He said, I can't help myself. I'm a scorpion. That's the nature of someone who's envious. They just want to give problems to others. They cannot stop that. They cannot stop giving problems to others. But then if you give problems to others, it all comes back to you. People don't realize that. I think I can just do that, and it all comes back. That's the point. You have to be very careful. So, if you act impiously, your life will become unfortunate. I saw my own father. Right? He was very physically attractive, big, tall, strong person, very attractive person, right? Had good money, good family, so many things. But over time, he became impious, right? And started doing impious things, treating others badly and mistreating different people. And then I saw his beauty was taken away, his wealth was taken away, and then his life was taken away. He died in his 60s, he caught a disease and then perished. Right? And it was all because acting impiously will all come back. So if you act impiously, all these things, if you act piously, if you serve Krishna, you will get the greatest benefit in your life. If you dedicate yourself to service to Krishna, you will have the most satisfying existence. So here it is saying, if you cultivate negative qualities, your lifespan will deteriorate. If you want to shorten your life, then just mistreat others. And you'll see, you'll become destroyed. My dear followers, never treat a learned brahmana harshly, even if he has sinned, even if he attacks you physically or repeatedly curses you. Always continue to offer him obeisances. That's interesting, Krishna is saying like this.
See,
yeah.
One doubt is there.
Yeah.
Krishna refers to brahmana.
Yeah.
So is it like the brahmana who is following only Lord Krishna, or he's like following the demigods, or you know, following the brahman,
majority? Just think of devotees. Devotees. Just think of devotees. So he says, my dear followers, this is important because Krishna himself is instructing us. We are called Vaishnavas. Vaishnavas means followers of Vishnu. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Prabhupada's Guru Maharaj, said Karshna. Karshna means followers of Krishna. We could call ourselves Karshna, but that term is not so common, so we say Vaishnavas. Actually, more specifically, you know, I don't meditate on Vishnu, I meditate on Krishna. That's our meditation. So therefore, because we're meditating on Krishna, we're his followers. And Krishna is saying specifically, you're my follower, I need you to act like this. Right? If Krishna is asking us to act in a particular way, we should act in that particular way. So Krishna is saying himself, never treat a brahmana harshly, even if he has sinned or attacks you physically or repeatedly curses you. Right? So sometimes you'll see someone who's very advanced, a devotee is very advanced, but they may act in a particular way and it may confuse you they've acted in that way. Yeah? But still, if they're highly placed, they still have a great deal of potency. But in particular, it means that sometimes we'll be chastised or corrected. Right? Sometimes a senior person will correct us. They'll say, you know, you're acting like this, you're doing like that, it's improper. Right? And they'll get angry with you and then they'll speak to you in a strong way. And our ego will not like that. We don't like to be corrected. So therefore, we may think, well, I will not offer respect to this person. But actually, if we're cultured, we will appreciate the correction of the senior personality more than the praise. Right? If we're less evolved, right, we always just want praise all the time. But if we're more sincere, we'll actually appreciate the correction. Because that is the best thing for us. And we still offer respect, even when we correct it. Just as I always carefully bow down to brahmanas, so all of you should likewise, bow down to them. I will punish anyone who acts otherwise.
So Krishna himself says in the Bhagavad Gita, yad yad acharati stresas. Whatever the great person does, everyone else follows. So Krishna himself, he bows to brahmanas. There's the pastime of Sudama Vipra. Sudama Vipra, this will be described in the 10th canto. He comes to Krishna. And Krishna himself puts him on his own seat, bathes his feet, takes the water from his feet and touches that to the head of everyone. Krishna himself. So this is the system.
Brahmanas extremely powerful.
What's that?
They are extremely powerful. Brahmanas.
Brahmanas, yeah.
Even though they appear to be poor or something, like materially impoverished.
Yeah, should think more devotees are powerful.
Yeah.
Yeah. Brahmanas, you know, you go to India, there's many people that say they're Brahmanas and like that, but they're not that powerful.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're not very powerful. Devotees are powerful. Some Brahmanas are powerful, mostly devotees are powerful. When a brahmana's property is stolen, even unknowingly, it certainly causes the person who takes it to fall down, just as the brahmana's cow did to Nariga. So Krishna is saying, look, here's an example, right in front of your eyes. Nariga, he did like this, became a lizard. A serious reaction. So there are two types of offense. There is knowing and unknowing. Knowing is much more severe. If you know you're doing something wrong and you do it, you get heavy reaction. If you do something unknowingly, you don't get as much reaction, but still the reaction will be. So the basic point is you must understand. That's why we have to study the scriptures. Right? Nectar of devotion is there. Prabhupada said that's a law book for ISKCON. Chapter 8 of the Nectar of Devotion is called Offenses to be Avoided. There are 64 offenses. Right? You have to study these things, learn these things, know what is right, what is wrong. Otherwise you'll act improperly and then you'll have problems in spiritual life. Having thus instructed the residents of Dwarka, Lord Mukunda, purifier of all the worlds, entered his palace. Sri Krishna Chandra Bhagavan Ki.